there, Edwina Farley with you for A Country Breakfast on RN. Consumers might have stopped buying branded milk to support dairy farmers, but those farmers are only now realising their losses of the dairy price crash, and it's up to $150,000 for some.
There was so much negativity around, and for me that's fairly active in the industry, I really had to make really good decisions for our business, and my husband was quite stressed and depressed as well, plus making decisions around money that wasn't there that we'd already spent.
Living through dairy financial crisis later in the program. Of course, it was one of the big news stories, not just a human interest story. Kath McAloon, good morning.
Good morning, Edwina.
So we've had a year since the dairy industry really hit the wall from a farmer's perspective. There were a lot of inquiries and political press conferences and moves to, you know, change the industry, make reforms. Where are we at?
Yeah, well, so far there's really been no findings or no action taken against the milk companies. As you mentioned there, we've had the competition regulator who's looking into whether Murray Goulburn and its rival Fonterra breached the Competition Act when they did announce that massive slash to farmgate prices. And not only the slash to prices, but I think why this was such a big story at the time was because they did it retrospectively. So in effect, asking farmers to pay back money that they'd already received. So there's been no result out of that inquiry. Also, Murray Goulburn is facing a separate investigation by the corporate watchdog ASIC, and also a class action lawsuit which was brought by some angry investors. So we're still waiting for the outcomes of those, as well as a federal government, a Senate inquiry as well. So lots to come. But it has been 12 months since that announcement back in April 2016. And for the dairy farmers, as you said, it's been a really tough 12 months. But for the industry more generally, there's been sort of a real sense of a lack of confidence in the industry and just a real fracturing of relationships. The ACCC's Mick Keogh sort of summed this up when he said that last year's events have really badly damaged relationships in the dairy sector.
There's been a substantial damage to the trust that dairy farmers had in the way that they are treated by processors. Now, that's not a universal thing. Some processors are viewed more positively than others.
And people might find this kind of curious. You know, it's like, what do you mean you've got a broken trust with the company that buys your produce? But it's sort of not as simple as that, is it? They're a cooperative establishment, which means that there are farmer shareholders. So it's a much tighter relationship,
Absolutely.
The Murray-Goulburn relationship.
Yeah, and in years gone past, farmers were really loyal to their processors, and it was sort of almost like a community, like farmers in a particular area would supply a certain processor, and there was that real relationship there where you, you know, you have a stake in the company. So the decisions made by that company are huge. They affect, you know, not just the price that you're getting, but they affect a lot more than that. So I guess that really goes to that trust, as Mr. Keogh says.
It's been a week of genomes.
A really big week for some major scientific breakthroughs, particularly for the grain sector, with scientists mapping the genetic code of some of our most important crops, being wheat and barley. Scientists say by mapping the genetic code of these crops, it will give researchers a better chance of improving crop yields. And in the case of barley, this was a good one for the beer drinkers. It could even create a healthier beer. So I'll explain what we mean by that, but basically just to some really basic science. Researchers from around the world have spent the best part of the last decade trying to sequence the barley genome. So what it basically means is that now they have a map and they'll be able to work out which traits are controlled by which genes. And now that they have that map, crop breeders can experiment with varieties that provide better disease resistance or particular traits that they're seeking, and they say that this could help, you know, find new varieties that are more resistant to climate change, or in the case of barley, it could even lead to them being able to develop a low-carb beer by selecting a particular variety of barley. So it's a really massive breakthrough, particularly at a time when farmers are constantly being asked to sort of produce more and, you know, in really uncertain times around the climate. So scientists are saying that this, particularly with the wheat genome, the map that they now have is more comprehensive than anything they've had before, and it will help them breed for those traits like disease resistance. One of the co-authors of the wheat genome study is Professor Harvey Miller from the University of Western Australia, and he says that this data will also help enhance food security.
The FAO have put a big requirement to say we really have to increase crop yields before 2050 to a level that almost seems unimaginable, to actually try and double crop yields before 2050 if we're going to feed people. So this is a big drive, I guess, in plant science now to say, well, what are the fundamental things we need to know if we're going to do that by 2050? And one of them is to have a really, really good map of the genomes of all of these major crops. And wheat, obviously, is right up there. It's one of the big ones.
We've been talking a lot this year about energy prices and the pressure on various businesses, from, you know, small farm productions through to big manufacturing industries like meat processing. The federal government announced restrictions, potential restrictions for gas exports to try to sort of shore up supplies in Australia. How's that been received?
It's been some really strong reaction to this one, and I guess it depends what side of the fence you sit on there. So what the government announced was that from the 1st of July this year, it will regulate so that it can force producers to boost supply for Australian users before they're allowed to export the gas overseas. As you say, there's been big concern from gas users, including many rural industries, about the increasingly high cost of gas and this strange situation which has been happening lately, where it's actually been cheaper in the past few months to buy Australian gas in Asia than to buy gas domestically. So it's a bit of a sort of a warped market that we have at the moment. Now, the reaction, the oil and gas industry is not happy with these new measures. The industry body, the Australian Petroleum Production and Exploration Association, says that this move by the government to sort of reserve gas in Australia is unprecedented, and they say that it risks exacerbating what are already really tight market conditions. But other industries that use gas here locally have welcomed the move. The Australian Industry Group has welcomed it. The Food and Grocery Council says government intervention in the domestic gas market is really long overdue, but it's also expressed concerns that state moratoria on gas extraction. So we see a number of states that have bans on gas extraction. They say that that's a large part of the supply problem.
Yeah, and that was what industry pointed the figure at too, not so much its exports.
So the council's Tanya Barden from the Food and Grocery Council says that the current pricing for gas at the moment in Australia is just unsustainable for growers and food manufacturers.
That at a price of up around $12 to $13, you'd see a loss of about 14,500 jobs across Australian manufacturing. We understand that the $3 to $4 days are gone, but companies are being quoted up to $20. And we've got an Asian spot market price that's only around $7. It's got to be well south of $12 to be viable for manufacturing.
One of the stories that has been an enduring story over the years has been free-range eggs and what constitutes free-range. Some progress has been made.
Yeah, the long wait for a national standard on what is free-range eggs and what the stocking density should be has reached some conclusion this week, with the federal government announcing some new laws. So from now on, any eggs that are labelled as being free-range, they'll require a stocking density of outdoors of 10,000 hens or less per hectare. So the stocking density will also have to be displayed prominently on the packaging of the eggs when you buy them. They say that the hens must also have meaningful and regular access to the outdoors. So I'm not exactly sure how they will be policing that or checking on what is meaningful.
Who's checking on meaningful access?
How many times does each chook go outside in a day, and how long are they out there for? It's a really difficult one.
And I wonder if that's to be determined by who decides that, the RSPCA, the farmers?
So I'd say this story is not over yet. I'd say it's got a way to go. And previously, the consumer group Choice had described that figure, that 10,000 birds per hectare. They described it as being something like a mosh pit when the birds are in the barn waiting to go outside. So I'm assuming they won't be happy with this one. But it has been welcomed already by egg farmers, who say that it gives them some certainty for egg producers and allows them to sort of make some investments in their business.
Now, the Kiwis are very clever at seizing opportunities, things like using wool for athletic wear, jumping on sort of bandwagons well ahead of Australia. And interestingly, they are now overtaking us in an industry that we're very proud of.
Yeah, they seem to have the jump on us on a few things, this fierce rivalry between Australia and New Zealand. And now they're edging us out of the wine export market into one of our largest markets, which is the US. So the value of New Zealand wine imports into the United States has topped the Australian industry for the first time. It hit just under $400 million Australian dollars. Now, interestingly, this result comes despite Australia still sending significantly higher volumes of wine into the American market. So what can we read into that?
I'm wondering, is this all of the Hollywood people who have their New Zealand getaway are drinking the expensive wines, taking them home, sharing the love?
Perhaps. I saw Sam Neill's New Zealand winery on TV the other day. It looks amazing. But it might just mean as well that Americans are drinking more wine all round.
Yes, or possibly, is it something to do with the type of wine?
Yeah, the more sort of high-end wine, they tend to go New Zealand, but maybe for Australia they are buying more of our cheaper plonk. Anyway, Tony Battaline is from the Winemakers Federation of Australia. He says where the Kiwis have sort of done really well compared to the Australians is that they're focusing on marketing a premium wine, and that's really paying off for them.
New Zealand has done very well in marketing their wine as a premium product into the United States, and they've targeted higher price points and they've done very well. We are underweight in the United States. It's now the largest wine market in the world and it's the third largest importer of wine by volume. So it is now and is going to be in the future a really important market for us.
Now, some very fascinating stats out of James Cook University, which is one of the unis to really champion training regional doctors with the thought that if you train them in a regional area, they're more likely to stay there. That's being echoed more broadly now.
Yeah, there was some economic modelling out this week, which backs the call for rural medical schools to be based in regional New South Wales and Victoria. Now, two regional unis, Charles Sturt Uni and La Trobe University, they've been ramping up their bid for their own medical schools, and they want the Commonwealth to back the proposal. They say that it would mean that more rural students would take on medical careers and they'd do that work in regional areas, and then they'd be more inclined to stay in the country and keep working in the country, which they think would solve this sort of rural doctor shortage that we've been talking about for so long. But the plan is getting a bit of pushback from some of the big city universities, because under this plan they'd lose up to 180 medical student places, and they're pushing back against it. So the Group of Eight, as they're known, which represents those sort of very well established Sandstone universities, which currently offer undergraduate medical degrees. The spokesperson for that group, Vicky Thompson, says that more medical schools, she believes, won't solve the rural doctor shortage.
The issue is a lot deeper than that. What we need to do is look at how we establish viable regional postgraduate training programs so that medical graduates can complete specialist training in regional locations.
And finally, as we head into the footy season, healthy snacks, not hot dogs and other nasty things, are on the agenda.
Yes, nuts. The Australian almond industry is sort of spying a bit of an opportunity to promote their product by sort of saying that it's a good product to eat for sports recovery. So the chairman of the Australian Almond Board, Neil Bennett, says they've been working with dietitians on promoting the health qualities of almonds. And he says the nuts are rich in antioxidants and vitamin E, and there's growing international research that shows the values of almonds as a recovery fuel, if you like.
We've got some of the AFL clubs with their dietitians that we've spoken with over the years. I know Hawthorn, to name one, has been using it in their program for a while.
They might have picked the wrong team there, though, because Hawthorn's probably had one of their worst starts to the season for quite a while.
I know I use almonds in my recovery care.
There you go.
Thank you for that.
Thanks, Edwina.
If you would like to know more about any of those news stories, just head to a Country Breakfast homepage via RN. Find us under the Programs tab.